On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, we run through the big breaking news to hit the press in regards to rule changes, we discuss whether it's fair that the seniors still get a game on the main tours, and we also talk Patrick Reed, obviously. As ever, hosted by myself, Ben Fowlis.
Myself, Chris Wright.
And myself, Tim Williams.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of A Slice of Golf. Now, unless you live under a rock, don't own a mobile phone and haven't checked social media, or you don't watch professional golf, it's been a bit of an action-packed week. There's been a lot going on. We've obviously been up to absolutely nothing because it's week 3021 in lockdown. Chaps, how are we getting on? How much golf did we watch this weekend? Christopher, I'll come to you first, buddy.
Yeah, not for the first time, but I don't do this often. On Thursday, I think it's fantasy golf, if I'm honest with you. Fantasy golf has got me really excited about golf, like even more excited than I normally am about golf. And I had my computer on, and then I had my laptop with Sky Go screen of golf, watching golf on Thursday morning, Friday morning, Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon. So yeah, I've been really enjoying watching golf while working.
Do we want to talk about the fantasy golf at the moment, or is this something we should just completely bypass because you and I suck?
Yeah, you beat me by 2 points or something this week, which I was furious. But I think I finished 39th and you finished 37th. So, I left out one of my key picks, and he's done really well this week, which I'll come to in a minute. But really enjoying it. And the Gavin Green let me down this week. Made the cut. I thought, yes, I've got him. Hits 11 over on Saturday. I thought, come on, dude, you're in my fantasy league team. This is not acceptable. Really enjoyed watching the golf this week. And I think the drama around the golf this week is actually, it's brought up some old points, hasn't it? But which I'm sure we're going to come on to. Yeah, enjoyable. I'm trying to dive in, but I don't want to sort of drag into everything.
Timothy, did you catch much of the action?
I did. I feel slightly, I was going to say guilty, but not really that guilty about how I ended up just watching way, way more of the PGA than the European Tour event. Mainly because of timings, as we talked about last week, the early sort of start with the Middle Eastern events just doesn't really work with me that well.
Doesn't suit a normal 9-to-5 job, does it really?
Doesn't really. The sort of the late night viewing from San Diego was much more in keeping with when I could watch it and whatnot.
Which, by the way, I'll chuck it in now and I'll interject. It actually looked like we were watching a tournament on the British Isles. Conditions in sunny San Diego weren't nay so sunny this weekend.
Well, I think it was I think it was Friday night. I think I was watching it. Obviously coverage going on quite late here, and myself and Ben were just in one of those sort of WhatsApp sort of absolute marathons with each other and sort of commenting on the conditions, saying, oh my god, these conditions are awful, which then rolled into Ben, you wouldn't be able to play in these conditions, you haven't got the minerals, you'd have walked off by now. So it just sort of snowballed into a gentle slanging war.
And Tim, this is what you wanted, right? Whenever we've spoken about what we wanted to see on tour, you've asked for conditions that push golfers.
Exactly. And it was great. I thought it was brilliant when the conditions really, really closed in. You're exactly right, Chris. I've been saying for ages that it would be great to see the pros trying to deal with, to be fair, the conditions they got handed at the weekend, which was hail, wind, rain, balls getting embedded. We're obviously going to talk a lot more about that. it was quite good to see that Phil in particular just sort of put an extra layer on and just carried on. Obviously things after that kind of got wrapped up a little bit, but really, really enjoyed it. I've slipped back into the habit of using the putt out in front of the TV whilst watching the golf. That's really enjoyable.
Nice.
I mean, the fact that I've only got the ability to putt from about 5 foot on the mat that I've got means you're probably not really, they're not the trickiest putts in the world, but that's quite nice to watch when you're watching the pros sink them from like 25 foot or whatever. So, yeah, I did enjoy it. But I say probably feel a bit guilty that I prioritised my PGA watching over the European Tour this weekend.
So it's something I noticed. I know I've kind of tongue-in-cheek said about the coverage. I don't know whether you noticed much of the PGA stuff this weekend, but the whole time it was Sky Sports commentators. It never went to the CBS comms.
CBS, there was a big thing about this last week, right? CBS is going through a big change. Yeah. I'm guessing that's now happened or is happening.
See, this is the thing. I kind of keep tabs on a few big guys on social media in the golf space that are based in the States, and they were still tweeting like they normally would, kind of crucifying the coverage. So I don't know what's happened from our shores over to theirs and what happened with the coverage, but it meant we got to watch a lot of golf, which without rubbing it in, I really enjoyed it. It was back to me really enjoying the PGA Tour. So,
the only trouble with that is, yeah, we had the Sky Sports commentators, but the feed, if you like, was still absolutely determined by the host broadcaster, which presumably is still CBS, which means that anytime they go to an ad break in the States, which is every 5 minutes, it feels like, basically, you do basically get those long shots where there's just nothing going on. It's like a shot of the beach. For like
a shot of a flower bed somewhere. And you're like, yeah, this is great.
You're just sitting there like, guys, there's definitely some golf going on. Could probably watch that rather than the waves lapping in. Don't get me wrong, it's very peaceful, but I'd rather watch the golf. That's what I'm here for.
Now, kind of before running back through kind of runners and riders and what happened in the tournament, it's just something that I picked up on, and I wondered, I've not asked you to yet, I wondered what your thoughts were on it. On the European Tour, Miguel Angel Jimenez actually made the cut. So he
was in my team.
It's quite an unusual pick. That was very out there.
I'm not going to lie. It was one of those ones where you pick your team and then you're like, I've only got this amount of money left. Who can I get? Yeah. And he was like the best one on there. I was like, yeah, great. You'll fill that spot.
Now, when I was looking through, I saw him pop up on the TV, and then I went scrolling through the leaderboard. I saw Ernie Els was also there. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at PJ, KJ Choi was back. That's a blast from kind of the 90s, back from when we were kids. Early 2000s, and then also obviously Phil was there. All players that are allowed, we'll say, to play on the Champions Tour. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about them dropping back to the Pro Tour? And particularly, the reason why I'm asking this is it was only a couple of weeks ago. I can't for the life of me remember the guy's name, but in Hawaii, he had to kind of finish in the top 10 to retain his tour card. Now, the older guys, realistically, are they going to challenge? I can't remember the last time any of them did. Should they be there taking a spot which someone who's kind of playing for his livelihood, these guys have had great careers, do you think they should be allowed to drop back down? Because I kind of got to a stage the other day, I was like, I can understand if they're on sponsors exemptions, but those sponsors exemptions are typically going to be to try and draw in a certain crowd. I don't think the allure is there anymore for those players. Tim?
It's so difficult. It's a really good question, because golf, as we all know, is not completely the same as a lot of other sports, where once you get past a certain age, it's like your ability to play drops. I'm pretty sure we can all attest to having been out on the course literally where we play and just seeing some old boys or old ladies who are just great swings, obviously playing well, scoring well. So you obviously can hold on to the game. There's also the side of it where, you know, you've got the characters like Phil and Jimenez, and they are that. They are characters. They are good people who are going to continue to bring an interest to the sport. You know, you do need your big, enduring characters. I mean, you know, how many people have watched the Jimenez warm-up sort of videos on YouTube or whatever and found
that still got it, by the way.
Exactly. But there's still a bit of a drawing of the crowds with these old players. At the other end, totally know what you mean in terms of letting new talent come through. So it's really difficult. Ultimately, the way it will pan out is obviously the beauty of the cut is on the final 2 days, whoever the best players are in the field are going to be there on the final 2 days. That's the beauty of the cut. That doesn't necessarily stop the issues you have before day one, which is who the total field is. So I don't have an answer, to be honest, because it's a really, really tricky one, because I can see it from the young players' point of view. I can see it from the interest point of view from the old players. I see it from the as a bit of a statement to people watching that, you know, golf is a game that you can play whatever age you are, right? And that's a great thing to still portray out to the masses, that even, let's say you've never picked up a set of golf clubs before, and you are, I don't know, let's say you're 60, 65, and you've played, let's say, cricket or tennis all your life, but now you're starting to feel like you're not able to play it at such a good level, so you want to take something else up. You can take golf up at that age. So I think that's a really nice thing. You can still feel you can do that. So yeah, to sit on the fence, I don't have an answer to that question.
Righty, I know you're going to sway me some way.
I think if you're good enough, I don't care how old you are, is what it comes down to. I think if people were coming back off the Champions Tours, Seniors Tours, and you know, shooting plus 25 or whatever, and it being pointless them being there, sure, but they're not. Jimenez coming in and making the cut and finishing where he finished on, I can't remember, it was a plus 4 or whatever. I think if you're good enough, I'd have no qualms with you being there. I think even if you're a young person coming through, you want to be able to beat anyone and everybody. It's not about, I only want to beat people within a certain age bracket. I think it's got to come down to, yeah, I want to beat everyone. And you talk about livelihoods. Well, just you can play on the seniors tour having not been on the other tours, right? So you can qualify for the seniors tour. You know, theoretically, we get good enough in the next however many years. And we can go play on. See, Tim's got a question. What's the? Are you going to tell me that I can't do this? Have I got that wrong?
No, I'm just going to say your mention that if you're good enough, then age doesn't matter, is all good and well. But that only works if every golfer, regardless of their age or track record, has the equivalent opportunity to enter the field. Trouble is, the older guys, sure, because of their profile and potentially the money involved with it, I feel like if they're getting a disproportionately higher opportunity to be in the events than the younger guys, that's potentially an issue.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it was just something I noticed the other day. It's the first time I've ever even thought about it, considered it. So it'd be interesting to see stats on players that are eligible for the seniors tours, where on average they do finish, and whether that typically makes the cut line or not. Because you know, most tournaments don't pay if you don't make the cut, so they're all going home with nothing anyway. But say, you know, Jimenez finished on Sunday, but he finished bottom of that group. That potentially could have been someone's spot, which that's kind of what was going on in my head, kind of thinking it. But anyway,
I think if you've made the cut, right? They've played well on Thursday, Friday. If they were missing the cut and finishing bottom of the leaderboard,
which Ernie was pretty close,
then possibly, yeah. Possibly, but there's always going to be someone. And it's just, I think it's difficult because if people are then going, as soon as you reach the age of, oh, you're now a senior, gutted, like Phil, still good enough.
Well, I wonder whether it's, because I was thinking of a resolution, I kind of thought, well, maybe there's a buffer period where you have a 5-year transition where you're allowed to play either tour. You can kind of bounce between the two, but once you're beyond, I think 55 would be the age, then it goes, or you set whatever age.
What is the age? Isn't Tiger there yet? Could Tiger theoretically be playing on the seniors tour yet?
I think seniors is 50. Tiger is not there yet.
I mean, he can't be far off.
I think it might be a system that might work is if you, you two will probably disagree with this. If once you get to the age of 50 or 55, whatever the age is deemed to be, is you put a cap on the number of tour events, then you cap that you can enter in a year, because that way you are actually putting something in place which doesn't stop them from entering something like the Masters. And we saw, you know, Bernard Langer was doing brilliantly at the Masters last time out. But it will stop, as long as they're not taking all the spaces at all the events, then you are still giving some of the youth the opportunity to play some of the events.
Yeah, I think for me it depends on, I don't know enough about it. Hands up here, I don't know enough about the qualification process for each of the events. Like, obviously, there's the bigger events which require you have to actually qualify for. There are some that you'll be exempt from, and you can just, anyone can come along. So I think without knowing the qualification process, I think if a player is playing well enough, so not there on name, but there on merit, i.e. you've played well enough this year on tour to qualify for that spot, then it's yours. I don't care.
I get that,
but I don't know enough about the qualification process. I'm going to add that in there.
No, we do enough golf watching and reading that I think going to that extent is probably a little beyond us at the moment. Right, going back through kind of the tournament, Dubai. Let's start with the European boys. I absolutely love a Dubai Classic. I have to admit, the field is always stacked. Tyrrell Hatton showing that you can have golf. Two days are two completely different days on the golf course. Had a train wreck on Thursday, had a belter on the Friday.
What do you reckon happened? I'm just putting it down to he'd had one too many beers celebrating.
I think he got royally pissed the week before and was really struggling. Yeah,
I hope that's the case. Just a 3-day hangover. Just absolutely struggling.
I did see the interview with him. I think he was coming off of the night for the 10th tee box with Tim. On his second round, where he was playing really, really well. And he did say he felt really tired and really like leggy on the Thursday, but Friday had a good night's sleep and felt pretty good. So, who knows?
And then to be honest, what did he hit? Hit plus, he was 8 over on Thursday and then 5 under or something on. No, was it that much? Was it that much? Either way, it was a big difference, wasn't it? And I just think we get angry at ourselves when week to week or month to month we hit 7 shots different, and I'm like, he's doing it and he's literally one of the best players in the world right now. We should not give ourselves such a hard time when we're hitting week to week a different score.
It does put it in perspective, that is for sure. And he also said he's a rare breed. He manages to hit his next shot even if he's still angry, and it's typically the outcome's pretty good. Being the person who loses his rag a little bit on the golf course, I do not have the same outcome, unfortunately. It's very, very often does not go well the next shot. So I have no idea how he does it, but fair play to him. Right, the winner, Paul Casey. I know we're all big fans of Paul. I think he's one of those people who's just impossible to dislike. I don't think there's not a bad bone in his body. Won by 4 shots again, which is good. It's good for his Ryder Cup kind of push, which is
huge.
And good for British golf. Finished on 17 under. A little bit disappointed for Robert McIntyre. I don't know how much of the final round that you saw, but he's, like he said in the interview, he's very much a let's go for it and we'll see where it takes us.
Ethos. Well, best lefty in the world right now.
Yeah.
He's the best lefty in the world.
Yeah. Better than Bubba?
I'm pretty sure he's the best lefty in the world rankings right now, I think.
Huh. Interesting. Might have to do a bit of digging.
I'll check.
Throwing yourself under that bus. I really like the way he plays. I've said before, there's something kind of nice about watching a lefty play. But for someone who is quite openly saying, I'm going for everything, and if it comes off and I win a tournament, it's because I've attacked everything. And if it doesn't, well, it doesn't. Unfortunately, it didn't on the final day. But again, you can't be upset about seeing Casey take the trophy. Timbo, I know you're a big fan of Paul's.
Yeah, I mean, there was on the coverage of the PGA event, which obviously we'll talk about in a second, there's a lot of chat about how Hovland will definitely make the Ryder Cup team. And he will. He will, basically. Casey's got to go, surely. Surely.
So, if he keeps playing the way he does, I had a quick look earlier on. Didn't check where Robert McIntyre and Bubba Watson were, but I know Casey's up to 15th in the world. So you'd think
I can confirm McIntyre is above Watson.
Wow, fair play. I mean, he has been good. If he's another player. If he starts, properly putting it together this year, there's going to be a lot of players in with a shout, and there's going to be a lot of players disappointed not to be in the Ryder Cup squad.
Tyrrell being one of them, apparently. So.
I'm willing to put my parents' house on it. Book his plane ticket now. He's going. Another young prospect, my guy Rasmus Højgaard. Another pretty solid outing. Tied on ninth place for 8 under par. Another pretty solid week. Anything more on the European Tour, chaps?
Yes, you've highlighted your one to watch in Højgaard, but my one to watch, Anton Rosner, also finished tied ninth in Dubai. So he was having a good week. We won't talk about Valimaki. He was, obviously given him the commentator's curse, because as soon as I said he's the one to watch, he's fallen off the planet. So we're now focusing on Rosner, and he had a really good week as well. So pleased to see that for him as well.
Always. Right, now switching across the Atlantic, heading over to the west coast of the States. We've briefly touched upon it. I've already touched upon the weather conditions. Sunny San Diego. Right. Before we address the elephant in the room, let's go get through the other kind of interesting stuff that happened. Patrick Reed took the win, ultimately. Which dominated. And this is why... I think this is where the controversy... doesn't make it worse, but why it's a bigger news story than what it could have been. We'll go into that in a sec, because I've got a feeling that could go on a little bit. He did win by 5 shots, which is, as you said, it's a battering, particularly when the winning score is 14 under par. It's not a massive 25, something like that. You know, that's a big win. Right, Tony Finau, tied for second. We have previously spoken about his lack of getting it over the line. Tim, I know.
Last week we spoke about this.
I think we did. Yeah. Uh-huh. I know, Tim, he's similar to Casey. Tim's a big fan of Finau, to be fair, as am I, and I think you are too, righty. Talk to me. What's going on with Tony?
So just some numbers, and apologies for... We're all Tony fans, by the way. Big, big, big Tony fans, so apologies. This is going to sound like I'm digging him out, but I promise I'm not. Some numbers...
Please on the show.
Since Tony's last win, there have been 8 runners-up, 22 top fives, 40 top tens, and 69 top 25s.
We've obviously all seen this photo. What is the more staggering number there? I keep looking at it, I'm like, nah, that's probably it. And then I'm like, no, it's definitely not that. It's that.
What do you mean?
The 40 top 10s is the most staggering number,
part of you goes, that's incredible. Like, the level of consistency is unbelievable. Like, I think we mentioned this last week, the person in second who's closest is Tommy Fleetwood, and I think he's got like 13 top 10s. Mm-hmm. Like, so the difference between him and the person who's coming in next with the top 10s is miles. So I think you have to look at it and go, he's clearly playing some freaking ridiculous and consistent golf. Why on earth has he not turned it into a win?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned how there's very little that separates, really, other than some outliers. The top 20, you'd say, in terms of talent alone, there's very, very little difference, really, between the top 20. You'd probably say, in terms of pure God-given talent, obviously Tiger, a DJ and a Rory are probably the outliers, and just in terms of just outrageous talent. But the other chasing pack, if you like, I would say talent pretty interchangeable. It's the top 6 inches. It can only be, in my opinion. It's... When you read he's had 8 runners-up and 40 top 10s, that's super, super impressive. But at what point does it stop being impressive and being like, come on? The reason those numbers look so massive and look so great is because other people that have had similar numbers have gone on and won.
Yep.
If you see what I mean. So they can look impressive, but they could also hide something else that's going on.
Yeah, and watching him speak as well, you can see it's dawning on him. He definitely knows. He must be deflecting and fielding questions left, right, and center about this all the time. But you could see him the other day. He cares about winning golf tournaments. Yeah. You know, what was it, 40 top 10s? This guy has earned a serious amount of cash in his career. He is gutted to be not winning golf tournaments. He came out and said, look, my putting needs to be better. And I think, Chris, it was one statement that you made.
Let me give you the stat. Oh, crap. And as soon as I said that, I've now lost it. He is ranked. So this season, as an example, let's have a look. Where have you gone? TT Green, he's ranked 13th. Okay. Strokes gained putting, he's ranked 105th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, that for me is just like everything. Off the tee, 28th. Around approach the green, 21st. Around the green, 45th. Every like strokes in putting, 105th.
Just do not go to the driving range. Just
yeah.
On the putting green. Just
get that putt out.
Yeah, that's it.
So like for me, it's just like if you're that good in the rest of your game that you're in the top 20, 25, whatever in terms of strokes gained, and yet you're putting. If his putting, imagine he was 60th in his putting.
Yeah,
he'd have won four tournaments.
Yeah. Well, it's like Tim said, it's got to be upstairs. That has to be it. It's a case of getting into a point where he could win, getting into the limelight, and just panicking a little bit. And we all know when you start getting a little bit nervous. Typically, it's going to go on the green first. You know, possibly we might have problems on the off the tee, but you know, he's an excellent driver of a golf ball, but once you start getting nervous, you're going to start rifling putts left, right, and center as an amateur. You know, when you're playing for $2 million, I can imagine it makes the knees a little bit trembly. But
again, I just think that strokes gained is like this is the average across all of his rounds, right? This isn't just the rounds that he was leading in. This is the round. Like every like it's. One putt percentage, he's 77th. Like, he's so far off the top in terms of strokes gained, the top 10 in putting. I just, he has to, for me, looking at the stats alone, I don't know what's going on between his head, but that for me is just such a clear of a point of you've got to improve that. That's got to be where you're getting it from. For me.
Yeah.
I think because we've, you know, spoken about it a couple of times and these stats keep coming out and we've seen them now. I think I'm paying even more attention to it as well. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, over the course of this year, what he does, because it's obvious he's got the talent. And the thing that, you know, is letting him down, it's one area of his game.
I think he'll win. I think he'll get a win under his belt in the next 3 months.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he didn't win this season, for sure.
I'd agree with that. Right, something else that came from the PGA tournament of the weekend. Chris, I know you didn't see it, but this is also what inspired me to get one of the subjects, which is coming later on in the show, but we're coming back to it now to the PGA tournament. Boys, the drop rule is absolutely frigging bonkers.
It was painful.
I don't know whether everyone saw it, but going into the final stretch yesterday, Victor Hovland absolutely nuked one for no real reason. Just hit it to the right of the green, you'd be fine. But he nuked one left of the green. Deep, gone, see you later. He's taken a drop, all right? He's blazed one out of bounds, so he's taken a drop on the boundary line. He's dropped, replaced the ball, he's dropped it. It's rolled down the hill. He's dropped it, it's rolled down the hill. It kept going again and again. The drop rule, you then place it on the spot there, bounced. Because it was on such a severe steep hill, he was placing it and it kept rolling down the hill. But they kept going at it again and again and again and again. If I had just switched over, and I wasn't the biggest fan of golf, probably wouldn't have hung around for too long watching that.
Yeah. What on earth is going on?
The thing was, there was a few times when... the first few times it rolled like quite a long way down the hill. It was getting to the point towards the end where you had the out of bounds spray paint red line on the side of the mound, and literally was pushing the ball down, and it was just like sort of trickling backwards, sort of resting, if you like, on that red line. And still, the official was like, "Okay, let's try it again. Let's try it again." I was like, "Just play the ball. Just play the ball. It's playable. Okay, it might be on the red line. Like, just get on with it."
Yeah. We were talking about the ball probably rolling half an inch in the end, if that.
Yeah.
Really not going to make a whole lot of difference for the player of a caliber of a PGA Tour level. you know, it's not Hovland's fault. It's not the rules official's fault. He's just there to apply the rules. But that just, I watched that and was like, this is ridiculous. And at that stage, Hovland was in contention. So there weren't many other matches out on the course to switch to. So we watched a good few minutes of Victor Hovland trying to place a golf ball on a specific blade of grass. Thought I'd bring it up. It's a bit pernickety, but yeah, rules have got to change. Right. Let's do the stretches. Let's get into it.
This is a big one.
The elephant in the room. This is the one that has been absolutely all over social media, and anyone and everyone who plays golf, I've been talking to about this over the past couple of days. On Friday, just setting the scene, on Friday, it absolutely belted it down, just like it has been in the UK. It made the course super soft, so the rules officials decided to put pick and place in play for any plugged balls. Very Sunday league, I might add. Didn't expect that on a PGA Tour. Tim. Well,
no, that's standard. If it's plugged, they're allowed to take relief. That's standard.
just don't expect to see it at a PGA Tour event.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Timbo, is Patrick Reed a cheat?
Right. Be clear about this. on this instance, no.
Agreed.
No. There was no cheating at all in this instance. And okay. There wasn't. There literally was not. There was no cheating whatsoever that went on this. And everyone needs to realize this and recognize. For the benefits of those who didn't watch it, I'm going to play it back really, really quickly what actually happened. So Patrick Reed hit his second shot, towering iron shot, round, it was sort of a blind corner to his left. So he never saw the ball. He never saw the ball come down. All right. In live footage, we clearly saw that it came down, bounced once, and then stopped. He went around the corner, asked the marshal, to be fair, he said, did it bounce? And the marshal said it didn't. So
no, the marshal said, I don't know.
No, the marshal said, no, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So this is where I've read it as the marshal said, I don't know.
No. They definitely said, no, there was definitely a negative in there. So anyway, he went over to where his ball was, put a tee down where the ball had rested, picked the ball up and just basically put it to one side. At that point, before he'd done that, he shouted over to his playing partner, I'm going to check this, put the ball up, put the tee down, said to his caddy to get the official over to basically check and validate that the ball had been embedded. All right. The official came over, checked, said, yep, yeah, I can feel the ridge there. I can feel the indentation. Club length relief. End of. Absolutely all of that is within the rules. He didn't even have to actually get the official over. He could have just shouted over to his playing partner and said, I'm just going to check this.
And golf being golf, the way that we play this game, from a moral perspective, that shouldn't have never even been questioned. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, you'd be like, yeah, Ben's clearly telling the truth. I'm going to give him the benefit of he's telling the truth. Go for it, Ben. Like, you can take your drop. That's fine.
Like, which is why the fact that the exact same thing happened to Rory McIlroy on the 18th, a few... like 20 minutes later or something, had the situation with Reed not happened, we wouldn't have even heard about this thing with Rory McIlroy. Yeah. I'm convinced.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So in answer to the original question, no, he did not cheat on this occasion.
Yeah.
Now,
I think this is one of those situations that has been, the media have lapped up. Everyone has to write a story. Everyone has to get eyeballs on content and blog posts, etc. And I think it's been blown way out of proportion because of you. You've led the question, Ben. Is Patrick Reed a cheat?
Yeah.
And if we didn't even have this in our heads, again, like you, Tim, you said with Rory, I don't think it'd have been questioned. But because of some of the actions that Patrick Reed has made in the past, you see someone pick up a ball and move it, people are like, hold up, what's going on there? And before you know it, one person tweets, and before you know it, it's the whole world has gone nuts. So, yeah, I think unfortunately his reputation has triggered a lot of the response. Yeah.
Yeah, so to my kind of thought with this is Patrick Reed in the past has not been innocent. He does not have a squeaky clean record. That is always going to follow you. It's the same in all sports. Anyone who has pushed the boundaries, gone past the boundaries, unfortunately, that is the brush you're now tarnished with. So people are going to magnify anything you do, and they're going to look at it. The one bit about the whole scenario, which I thought, I kind of feel like that's a little bit odd, and maybe it looks like you're trying to hide something, was the fact that he went over to it, picked the ball out of its plugged light, and then dropped it down way back. I kind of thought, if it's plugged, why don't you just wait until the rule official is there, rather than getting him to come over and feel the hole to double check? I just thought that's a rod for your own back there. To crucify her.
Again, he didn't need to do that within the letter of the law. He doesn't need to do that.
Yeah. No, and I get that, but that's what I mean is look, people have already got a spotlight on him. That is where just leave it alone. Call the rules official. I know he doesn't have to, but people still question it.
I actually think the reason he called, I mean, I don't know, I'm sort of six of one, half dozen on the other in this one, because there's part of me that thinks the reason he called the official over was actually to kind of demonstrate, no, I'm playing by the rules, and can you just come and validate that I am doing everything right? Yeah. And that's why he got the official over. So I think there's part of me which thinks that. There's another part of me which thinks, and it's quite a big part of me which thinks, Patrick Reed just does not give a fuck. Because annoyingly, I mean, he's had his moments in the past, and he's done things that haven't been cool. But recently, and I'd say even the last 6-12 months, I'm just going to put out there, I really like watching Patrick Reed. He's a great golfer to watch.
He is. I just want to ask one more question. Yeah. I just want to ask one more question because I want to go on to the, Patrick Reed is a freaking outstanding golfer.
Yeah.
The one thing that it keeps coming back to me is you're walking up to your ball, you haven't seen it yet. Why are you asking someone if it's bounced?
It's an interesting one because it doesn't matter, does it? I mean, the fact that it's bounced or not is kind of irrelevant. If the ball's embedded, it's embedded.
It's embedded. So why are you feeling the need to ask someone if you saw it bounce? That's the only thing that I'm like, and why is he even asking that question? Why does he care? He hasn't even got to the ball. He doesn't even know that the ball is plugged. Like if you get there and it's plugged, great, pick it out.
Again, it comes into, I don't know, it makes you question, was it premeditated? Was it actually plugged? That's where, his reputation precedes him, and people will ask those questions which wouldn't necessarily have been asked.
Or is it the same thing as when we're out playing on a Saturday, on a Sunday, and your mate is further up ahead of you, and you might ask them, oh, did you see it bounce off that? Did it come back off the trees? Did it embed over there? Did it hit?
No, but you would never say, did it embed.
He might be asking a question ahead, so that him in his mind be like, fuck's sake, is it embedded? Okay, all
right. This hypothetical situation, he is premeditating it. So the woman has responded saying, I don't know, I can't say for sure. He goes over to the ball. We can't prove whether he's definitely done or not done this. And he's actually put pressure on the ball to create the indent in the ground. Because the ball, when you watch it on video, it has hit the floor and bounced and then came to rest. There is a very small chance that has actually caused the ball to embed in the floor. Is there potential? Yes, absolutely. Potential. And that's where I kind of look at it. I'm really torn because, I'm similar to you, Tim. I've really enjoyed watching Patrick Reed play golf over the past year. But I watched that and was like, I'm not sure.
It just doesn't look good, does it?
No.
I'm like, it's just the way he's gone about it, I think, was not the best approach, and it's so frustrating because he's won by, what was it, he won by 5 shots. Like, it's just not even the what kind of part of the annoys again is that this is the conversation we're having and not that he's won by 5 shots. and we should be celebrating that he's had an awesome round, you know, an awesome 4 days. And all we're talking about is, did he or did he not pick up a ball that shouldn't have taken a really from?
On Sunday, he was clutch. I think I watched a couple of holes and straight away I thought, well, he's going to win this. Just everything he was doing, just the rhythm looked great. His putting was great. His short game is outrageous. And I think that is what could have been the story. Unfortunately, it isn't.
I think the trouble is, you know, with Reed, and, you know, this is probably with him for the rest of his career, right? There's always going to be so many instances of him being under the microscope, or there's so many, oh, I wonder if he did this, or did he do this, or did he have this motivation? Did he hypothetically do this? And you know what? It comes down to a really simple thing that is at all levels of the game, whether you're a pro, whether you're an amateur, whether you're an absolute hacker like we are. Like, ultimately, golf is just literally, be honest. It's like that kind of classing of like, you're only cheating yourself sort of thing if you're being dishonest on the course. Like, even if, look, you can go with like being called out on the spot. Like, let's say you get to the end of a hole and you say, oh yeah, I got a six, and you got an eight, and you get called out for doing that, or whatever it is. Either get called out there or then, or whenever you play with people in the future, they're always going to be like, oh, here he comes. He's probably got about six spare balls in his pocket. Oh, are you sure that's the one from us? Oh, you went into seemed to find that ball pretty quickly, the one that we saw you absolutely sending how it turned into woods. You know, there's always going to be those questions. So it comes back down to any level of the golf. Like, you know what? Just don't do that thing of like having questions. Just be honest. You know, certainly our level, just play for a bit of a laugh. Like, if you hit one out of bounds, you hit it out of bounds. If you get a shit score. Don't have all that carry on, because it's going to bite you one way or another, and it's biting him, right?
Yeah, I think our level, it just comes down to, if you're not sure, ask, right? And then if no one is sure, just come up with a sensible, what everyone agrees on solution, to be honest with you. But at that level, I just think there's too much going on, and there's too much on the line for it to not be seen or not be picked up at some point. There was a couple of players that came out, wasn't there, in the end of the week, and just saying, you know, he's protected or whatever. And I'm just like, you call them out, or
that's the thing. It's not just immediate reputation, is it?
It's
a reputation within his fellow players as well, which I think, you know, it says quite a lot, particularly when they're willing to come out in public in their own interviews and responded the way they did. I saw Xander Schauffele saying,
I was going to say, he was holding back.
No, he didn't care. And both of those, well, on current form, are definitely going to be in the Ryder Cup team together, which makes for quite a juicy team when you throw DeChambeau into the mix as well. They can all argue with each other.
I think it's, even around the last Ryder Cup, I remember seeing a quote of, it was something like, has anyone ever noticed that the European team actually get on with each other and the Americans just seem to hate each other? Like, it's just, they're players that just rip into each other the whole way throughout the year, and then they're expected to play well together as a team. I think that's quite, this is one of those moments. If you're going to put together, you know, six people that just don't like each other, it's just good for us, good for Europe, to be honest with you. I'm like, yeah, great.
12 captains picks for the American team.
It's kind of like, if you went all the way back to when Tiger was in his sort of first, let's say, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 Ryder Cups, and everyone's saying like, how are the, or you know, whatever he's playing, it's like, how are the US not just tearing this up every single time by virtue of Tiger being there? And it's literally because Tiger, certainly early on in his career, had like zero camaraderie with any other players. They were just like obstacles in his way.
So
there's something in it, definitely.
Well, I don't know whether it's happened to you as well, Chris, but it sounds like Tim has just ducked his head underwater. So
reset your mic, Tim. And while Ben we need to move on from Patrick Reed now. Ben, take us on to something else.
Right, cool. There's two bits of news that have come out today, and actually it's broken fairly recently. The first one, we can very quickly kind of go over it, but it's TaylorMade are up for sale. So if anyone's got a spare £2 billion in their pocket, make an offer. I don't know how or what that will impact the players. I mean, I had a quick look. I didn't even realize 3 years ago Adidas owned it. got bought out by an equity firm, which, by the way, it's been valued today at $2 billion. They bought it for $425 million.
Yeah.
That's good. A nice return on investment. Three years.
Investment.
Thank you very much.
That's been, they've valued that based on Callaway, or used Callaway as a guide, I think, which is at 2.6 or something. So, yeah, well done them.
Nice. Right, the other kind of big breaking news, which is what we actually kind of wanted to talk about, is the news that today, well, rather through Golf Monthly, today they posted an article confirming that the RNA and the USGA have sent proposals to manufacturers to start looking into altering equipment to rein in the distance. But, my fellow hackers, good news for us. Do not fear. According to the article, the rules are only going to apply to professionals. Key points from these, and then I'll let you two kind of tee off on it. Three points are... Yeah, great fun.
Well done.
So they're looking to reduce the driver shaft length down to 46 inches. Golf ball.
From 48.
48. This is the thing. This is kind of one of my points. I'm just going to reel it off now. My current driver and the drivers that most pros use on tour are currently 46 inches.
It's only Bryson and Phil that use a 48, right?
Yeah, and Phil can't keep the ball on the planet at the moment. So that's not much of an advantage. So that's the first rule. Is it pointless? But second rule, I couldn't really see anything in regards to the rule. Typical golf wording, it's very technical. So I tried to pull it out, but by the looks of it, I think they're just changing how they test the balls to see if the ball conforms to their standards. They're not actually changing the ball itself. Now, if the balls start failing the tests, then obviously they're then going to turn around and say, right, you need to change it. But I think from reading into it, that's what's happening. And then the club face. So altering the spring-like effect on driver faces. Who wants to go first, and what do you want to jump into? We'll
Tim, there you go. So, does this mean that technically there's a chance that us hackers are going to be playing with the best equipment in the world going forward?
Depends what you define as best equipment.
Well, I suppose if it's the ability to... I don't know. So, yeah, I suppose if it's the ability to hit the ball longer, then... We're not being reined in on what we can do. So yeah, technically we're playing with the best equipment. Is basically where I'm going with this.
Question on that: how do you feel about it, knowing that you're going to be using different equipment to the pros?
For me, personally,
2 seconds. If these rules get the green light and it's passed, go.
Personally, for me, it doesn't really impact massively on me. I bought my irons 3 years ago. I'm not changing them anytime soon. The driver in my bag is a hand-me-down. Probably not going to change that anytime soon. I think the interesting place it gets to is potentially from an aspirational point of view, that kind of almost to be like, oh, and so-and-so has to play with a 46 driver. Maybe that's like quite a, maybe in a weird warped way, it becomes a sort of badge of honor. You know, almost wear like a bragging rights. Oh, yeah, I play with 46 because I have to have my distance and dispersion reined in a little bit. Joking aside,
don't claim bragging rights for that one, mate.
No, exactly. Joking aside, no, it doesn't mean anything to me as a very average hacker. I suppose the concern I have is actually more within the pros around that the perceived answer to the scoring that's going on is to limit the tools that the pros have. That's the bigger concern I have. Whereas don't just make the tools different, set the courses up harder, make the fairway thinner, make the rough more punishing. We've talked about this loads. Yeah. In the past, it's not about changing the tools; it's about changing the course. In my opinion,
I think Tim, I'm actually very much with you on this. I think what this implies is it kind of feels like Ben. I think from what I understood, you're right. It's the way they're testing the ball. They've looked at shaft length, and they're going, this affects two players on tour. That's not going to be a big change. And then the spring, you know, the face of the driver or whatever. It almost feels like they're like, well, let's sneak in these three. And it then sets the precedent for then what's going to happen in the future, where they go, okay, that was fine. Now what we're going to do is we're going to limit this. We're going to change this. Yeah.
Interesting.
There's a lot that I think we could go into, and I know we've spoken about it before. I think this assumes that the problem is that people are hitting the ball too far is the problem. And for me, what I hear a lot, and that it makes for bad viewing, and I do hear it from a few people that they don't like watching driver wedge. I do hear that. But I think if you make, like what Tim's saying is, well, make it super punishing. Make it so that if you're not on the fairway, you're in, you know, it's a hack out to the side or whatever, and make it punishing so that if you're using driver and putting it in play, great, well done. But if you're not, you're in trouble.
Right. So echoing on that point, I messaged you two about it. I went out today and on my walk, I listened to Me and My Goals podcast with Padraig Harrington, now a very, very respected golfer in the game, a big figure in the game, you know, won a lot. And he said, it's just not the right way to go.
Right. Interesting. Now,
3 points that I've written down from what he was saying. His argument was that dialing back the distance is going to be of even more benefit once they've dialed it back to the longer hitters.
Yeah. It's
even more of an advantage than what they have now, because currently them bombing it 350 yards, you know, they're hitting into tiny parts of fairways or to particular parts of doglegs, which is not, you know, it's just too much. If you take 10% off, they're to hitting it 320. Well, think about where the boys are in the middle of the fairways that are currently hitting it 320 on tour. Smack bang in the middle of the fairway, big fat part of the fairway. It's not going to make the game any more competitive. And if anything, the gap is going to get bigger because, well, they're shooting to bigger parts of the fairway, whereas before they're shooting to tiny little bits. Another point kind of that he said in regards to that, dialing it back from 350 to 320, there's a lot more that can go wrong hitting it 350 yards. If you're hitting it 350 yards offline, you know, think about 50 yards offline versus 320 yards, you know, and
it's the extra 30 yards, right? It's the extra, if you're going 30 yards for us three, for example, that's not 30 yards further up the fairway. It's 30 yards further into the shit, right? Yeah. So that's the difference for us.
And let's get it right. These players do hit bad shots, but we don't often see them because it's the better players that are in contention that are shown on the coverage. They don't show the people down the back that are having a stinker and smashing it in the trees. So his argument with that is well, they've then got a safety valve. The big boys are going to throw even more at it, knowing that all they are going to be able to do is hit it to the fatter part of the fairway. At the moment, Bryson is absolutely launching himself at the golf ball to hit it 350 yards, hitting to tiny spots. Imagine what he's going to do when he knows he's hitting to a big, wide open fairway. And like in the final bit, the final point that I'm going to bring up that he said was that athletes are always going to prevail. Mm. The Tiger generation, the generation after Tiger, was always destined to change the game because it was the first real athlete in the sport. If you're changing the rules to make it more competitive, you are massively heading in the wrong direction at the moment, because he said it's just going to make the gap even bigger.
Yeah, I think the and by the way, I'm going to start this with the fact of I am totally on the side of just make the courses more difficult for the pros. Like, that's kind of my approach. But I like to kind of look at the other angles and kind of go, okay, well, let's ask this question. I know I've mentioned this before, but baseball is a prime example, right? Baseball, they started coming up with the bats that were just, people were just theoretically could hit home runs for fun. Now, what they didn't do was just expand the field. They didn't just start knocking down stadiums and making the pitch bigger so that there was less home runs. They said, nope, okay, we'll limit the tech. Everyone has to use a bat that conforms to this. The ball has to stay as a whatever the ball is. And they actually had less out of the park home runs, etc., for that reason. So that's kind of going, it has been done in other sports, and like, do people want to see home run after home run? Probably. But actually, what they've deemed as is better for the game. I know nothing about baseball, by the way. For it not to be that, for it not just to be a slugfest or whatever. So I can understand the side of saying, you know what, let's limit it. What if they limited the equipment and made the courses more difficult? Like, what if they then took it to 320 and made the 320 area of the fairway much narrower with rough much higher on the side? Like, I don't mind that. I genuinely, it's not something that bothers me. And the end result is, whatever they do, the athletes will adapt. Like, it's not, they will adapt. They will bitch and moan about it for 3 months, and then they'll come out and play and they'll perform. And I don't think that there'll be a massive change in the world rankings as a result of this. I think as long as everyone is impacted the same percent, you might see a bit closer gap. I actually think you'd bring it closer potentially, but yeah.
All I keep thinking with the whole thing is look, instead of driver wedge, they're now just going to be taking driver 8-iron. Like, that's what it comes down to. I don't get the point of going through it all. I don't know whether to say narrow-minded, but I'm very much decided on this point of just making the golf courses harder.
It's literally the only
dinosaurs that just want to, because they didn't do it in their time. It's almost like, no, the game, you know, evolution happens. It's part of the world. Why are we trying to limit that at the moment? I don't know.
Can I put another spin on this?
Do you want to?
And I think this obviously, by the way, I'm going to preface this with, this would obviously never happen. However, I think this is an interesting question. And by the way, can I just quickly go back to your, how would it make you feel about not using the same clubs? And I know this is a bit different, but F1, you know, anyone who drives a Ferrari isn't driving the F1 version of a Ferrari. Like, they're watching a sport that's elite is totally different to what the average person is doing. However, this is kind of the conversation that started going around in my head. Is it, I don't know enough about Formula One, but is it F2 that everyone drives the same car?
It's something like everyone has to have the same engine or something like that.
Right. My question for you, what if everyone used the same tech? What if everyone had to use the same ball? I know it will never happen, but my question is this. Everyone's using the same ball. Everyone's using the same clubs, everything. Who's the best golfer in the world? Does it change?
It'd be a great event. It'd be such a good event to give everyone exactly the same tech and clubs to use.
I actually think it would. I think the world ranking would be different because, as we spoke about earlier, anyone from the top 20, really, that we would say, if you were to stick them all on the course and say, right, go, any of those top 20 could win. You know, we've spoken about it before. There's some clubs that are great for some players aren't great for others. If you were to give one player a set club, I kind of feel like, yeah, they would take time to adjust. But even then, I think there would still be margins where they just wouldn't be able to catch up due to the tech.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's a reason why these brands have massive research and development teams and invest millions into, you know, making these clubs and tailoring them for their pro athletes. Sorry, Tim.
Quite clearly, the only solution to this problem is what we've talked about before, and that is to make the golf courses much, much, much more extreme by putting movable objects and obstacles and hazards more in the way. I mean, joking aside, the sorting the courses out is the only way to fix the problem. Make the courses more extreme. Make the fairways thinner, rough more extreme, pin positions ridiculous. That's the only way the best golfer is going to win.
So I know, Chris, I'm kind of stealing your statement here, but it's like, we want it to stay the same, make the courses harder. The players want it to stay the same, just make the courses harder. The only people who don't seem to be the dinosaurs or the guys in charge of the rules.
Yeah, but and that begs the question, why? Like, why? What do the governing bodies think? What are they thinking? Why are they thinking that actually bringing equipment back is the best option? Why are they thinking that? What's their thought? Like, I don't know.
Again, I personally think it's because you have. I've said his name before, and I don't want to dig him out again. Going on to Sky Sports and banging on about it all the time about how players just bang it down there with a driver now, and then they wedge it on. I feel it's just a lot of the time it's bitterness from ex-players who aren't playing in this modern era and can't experience the game the way the current players are. They didn't have the tech. They didn't have the information, didn't have the coaches to get them fit and strong like the boys are nowadays. and I just feel like they just want to have a moan. Just old man syndrome.
Okay. Interesting.
But governing bodies is, and again, that might be, I don't know who's running the governing bodies, to be fair, but I just think if their thought process, I want to know what their thought process is. I want to know why they're thinking, with everybody saying, just make the courses harder, just make, you know, just do this, grow the rough out, whatever. Why are they still coming back to equip? There has to be a reason, whether it's economical, whether it's, you know, whether it's they believe it's going to be better viewing this way. Like, there has to be a reason they think it. And I just don't know what that is.
The really interesting thing to know would be if and who they are consulting when they're making these rules and recommendations. Yeah. If it is literally just coming from the board without any further consultation, we can be pretty sure why that decision is getting made. If they are, however, talking to the golf courses, the professionals, come out and say that. Say what the feedback is. Tell us what they're saying, why you're making these, why you've not gone the other way, exactly as you're saying, Chris. Yeah, it would just be interesting to know who they've talked to make this decision.
Yeah.
Interesting to know, like, just looking forward, is it in the best interest of the game? That ultimately is why they're going
to
change.
But to be honest with you, what this all comes down to is I don't, and I might be incredibly wrong here, the changes that they would make in equipment, I just don't see this. This might be me being really like naive. We're still going to enjoy watching golf. Everyone will still, the players will just crack on with it. They'll bitch and moan, then they'll crack on with it. But the reason is why are they doing it? That's what I really want to understand is the why. Like, they make the changes, they'll make the changes. Everyone will bitch and moan, will crack on. Like, it won't make viewing it any less exciting. It won't make playing it any less exciting. It won't affect us as amateurs. Like, I just want to understand why they're doing it, not just because they are. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of that's where I'm coming from on this.
The other trouble as well is it sets a precedent, which is, okay, we're in this situation where the players have, they're now athletes and they've evolved, they can hit the ball these distances using this tech. Okay, we'll limit the tech. Okay, what happens then when, because it will happen, people will continue to develop and evolve and get more athletic and hit the ball further. So what then happens at the end? Do you limit again? And do you just keep periodically bringing the tech back?
What do they say? You've done 4 workouts this week. That's illegal. You're only actually allowed to do 3. Like, where do they limit it? Oh, you've had a green like nutrition shake today. That's actually illegal. You can't do like.
Yeah. It's the precedent it sets, which is a bit worrying.
There was a negative thought that I had about it, which may impact it. Now, this is a massive swing. It could be a swing and a miss because I personally don't really like Formula One. It's not my cup of tea at all. My concern is that we get a situation similar to what happened in F1. The rules are tweaked, which is thought as kind of for the best interest of the sport. But there's one company who spots an opportunity, sees almost like a loophole in the new rules, and manages to create this one club which just blows the others to smithereens. Reason why I say Formula One, look at what Mercedes have done in the past. This is why I don't like Formula One. I think it's pointless. But that's not for this podcast.
But that's
so dominant by one team. And I wonder whether, say, a Callaway or a Titleist, if this happens and all of a sudden the top of the leaderboard is then stacked with their staff players, then we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, but there's nothing really stopping them doing that now, right? And I agree with you. Like, you watch Formula One and you go, and that's why I bring up the, if everyone was using the same club, the same ball, who's the best golfer? Because actually that's the fairest way. But I think right now all the clubs are that, you know, they're so similar in terms of what they, you know, how they're made, what they're allowed to be. Then yeah, but and again, part of you goes, okay, great. If Callaway find that loophole and they create clubs that match that, well done them. But it will be a season before someone else catches up, like before everyone else goes, oh, we missed that, or they changed the rule, or what. Like, it's, yeah.
I must add for these are not definitive, set in stone yet. These are the proposals that have been sent, and the RNA and the USGA are basically requesting manufacturers and all those that have a say to come back with feedback to find out, you know, if they want. One thing which will be sad as well, because they're, you know, they're getting rid of the driver face stuff, it means we're going to have like a lot less crappy marketing campaigns to joke about. twist face and all that.
Are you joking? They'll still be there. They'll still be there.
Well, you know, who knows? No, I think. I mean, this is kind of pushing my own agenda out there. Statement that was made today by one of the tour pros. Webb Simpson came out flat out, knocked it through the covers for four. What he said was, an equipment rollback is not what we need. We need to tweak our golf courses.
Yeah.
This is coming from someone who's one of the best players in the world. And you hope the RNA and the USGA do consult with them as well. I know the players are always going to think of their own best interests at heart. But for some players, particularly Webb, he's not one of our longest on tour. So you would think trying to somehow alter distance is going to benefit him. I don't know.
I do enjoy this chat. Can I just, I do enjoy this. Yeah. I enjoy when we, I would almost love to have someone on here who is a hardcore, we have to roll the equipment back. So that I want to have a conversation with someone about that so that I can really hear their side of it and understand where they're coming from. Because right now, all the three of us agree. And I think, which is unusual, but I'd love to hear some of the thoughts of people who are like totally, totally all for rolling the equipment back or making equipment changes, because I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, just tell us if we're being idiots.
Yeah. And Webb Simpson, by the way, he's being included in your who's being an idiot.
And Padraig Harrington, we'll group Padraig Harrington. We're on the same team. Mate, good five star team. Right, gentlemen, any more to add to the matter?
I don't think so. I think that's everything for me.
Yeah.
I'm now going through my notes just to make sure. Yeah, that's everything for me. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, no, awesome. Right, that about wraps us up for this week, chaps. Big field heading out to Saudi Arabia on the European Tour. A few missing, boycotting the event, but and I've seen DJ already in his practice rounds absolutely sending cane bombs, so we'll see kind of how we get on. I've got a feeling we'll have a lot to talk about.
Isn't it Phoenix Open this weekend as well?
It is. I'm very sad about that.
No fans.
No fans. I kind of feel like they should have just postponed that until like October time or so. Phoenix is quite a hot place in the world. Postpone it till later on.
I'm still looking forward to watching it. I think there must be a pretty decent field going out there still. I think it's, you're right. It's just not the same without the fans, is it?
That's it. Yeah. Right. Chaps, that's it from me.
Likewise.
All from me.
Catch you later.
See you later.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Myself, Tim, and Chris would greatly appreciate it if you dropped us a rating and a review if you love the show. A big thanks to Sunday Red Golf for sponsoring us. Sunday Red is the golf club for those of you that are like us, love the game of golf, but don't take yourself too seriously. If you want to join our club, head over to sundayredgolf.co.uk and also join our Facebook group. Also, a big thanks to TourChamp. If you want to create your own golf leagues or join one of ours, then please visit tourchamp.co and create your league for free. Thanks for listening.